Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Weekend, huh? A minute and a half past the hour, we begin this week's broadcasting on the horn, America's liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Conversation Radio, unlike anything you are likely to hear anywhere else, terrestrial, satellite, or some other interweb tubes program. It's just that unique. It is ordinarily Moran Monday. Mondays are Moran Mondays on the horn. But I've spent pretty much all day engulfed in just wave after wave of, I don't feel very funny right now. I don't feel like doing the shtick, the bit. And it's almost difficult to tell where to start. Well, under those circumstances, let's start with some program notes. Everybody pay attention. Write this down. I will not be on the air tomorrow night. Why won't you be on the air tomorrow night, Bob? Well, I won't be on the air tomorrow night because there is a public hearing in the Coal River Valley tomorrow on two mountains that are slated for execution by coal companies. One is Coal River Mountain itself, where we have long proposed a wind farm instead of destruction. If you go over to Coal Tattoo at WVGazette.com, you will find a story today on the blog there, Coal Tattoo, by Ken Ward, of course. It's his blog. Noting all the delays and foot dragging that have been occasioned by simple questions by the Office of Surface Mining and Reclamation and Enforcement, a federal government agency, about the Brushy Fork impoundment. You've heard about the Brushy Fork impoundment from me as well. It is the largest earthen dam in the Western Hemisphere. It's the largest dam in the Western Hemisphere. Yeah, that big. You people in Vegas, you think with your Hoover Dam. The Brushy Fork impoundment is a dirt dam that holds back something on the order of 9 billion gallons of toxic waste. When it breaks, not if, but when, everything in the path of that toxic waste, that goo, that slurry, that sludge, will die. The wall of water will be something on the order of at least 40 to 60, possibly 75 feet high. Here's a hint. The nearest town is Whitesville. There isn't a single building in Whitesville 75 feet high. That's 7.5 stories. The bad news? The dam ain't stable. The worst news, the DEP doesn't care. The even worser news, they want to blast by it some more. No, really, that's how it works around here. So there's a hearing tomorrow near Whitesville. I will be there. Agnes will be with me, perhaps some family members, standing in solidarity with our brothers, sisters, friends, neighbors, and colleagues in the Coal River Valley. Coal River Mountain Watch, whom I tell you routinely, and who sponsors this program in part, whom I tell you routinely are the bravest, hardest working people I know, will be spearheading the effort to stop these permits. So I'm not going to be here tomorrow night. Hopefully the rest of the week will be normal, normal, normal. But I hope you can understand me being away from the microphone, since there's no point in me being behind it if I'm... There's no sense in talking the talk if you're not walking the walk. Right? I thought you'd understand. So there's that. Now, other things. Let's get this out of the way. Any given week, any given evening, we need to raise, at a bare minimum, $60. Six people, $10 a piece. We didn't do that Friday. So call it $100 tonight. $10, 10 people. PayPal button, headonradionetwork.com. That's how we make sure there will be a September here in the early weeks of August. This is a contribution-based program. Partial sponsorship by Coal River Mountain Watch, and the rest is up to y'all. Okay? Headonradionetwork.com. The tab is Contribute. You will find there the snail mail address or the PayPal button. And your kind contributions are what keeps all of this going. We need 10 at least tonight. Okay? Now, as for a show itself, where to begin? A tale, and this is only a beginning point. This is not where the stack this evening is tall and disturbing. But we will begin with a pair of bookend stories, if you will. It is a tale of two brown men. One in London, named Mark Duggan. Another in Jackson, Mississippi. Named James Craig Anderson. Mark Duggan in London, a 29-year-old man. James Craig Anderson, a 49-year-old worker at an auto plant near Jackson, Mississippi. Both men are now dead. It is really a question, a matter, if you will, of answers. In the one case, answers to questions that were not given, and in another case, answers to questions that we know all too well. Over the past couple of days, you see, and there's not just a ton of coverage about it, but some. But over the past couple of days, London has caught fire in the aftermath of the killing of Mark Duggan by the police of the City of London. Mark Duggan was killed Thursday night. Police claimed he had shot at them. They also claimed that he was a gang leader. He was dangerous and into drugs. They made all manner of scurrilous claims about Mark Duggan, the police did. He turned me into a newt. No. They claimed that a bullet lodged in a London policeman's radio microphone proved that Mark Duggan had fired on them, Forensics tests received by The Guardian, however, now show that the bullet was police issue. Mark Duggan, father of four, was shot down Thursday night by police. Members of his family went to the police station on Tottenham Road seeking answers. They were going to hold a one-hour vigil. Over the course of 48 hours, the police refused to speak with Mark Duggan's family whatsoever. And then it began to turn nasty. Very nasty. With gangs of youths allegedly running rampant through London, burning and looting. The video that I saw was quite stunning. So too were the explanations given by the usual sources that they were just teenage hooligans. Scotland Yard described the violence as disgraceful. Oddly enough, Scotland Yard did not describe the gunning down of a 29-year-old father of four as disgraceful. And the last I checked, the fires were still burning, and the violence was spreading. There may be an initial cause, but there are always underlying factors. What kind of a future does a 16-year-old Londoner have? As the worldwide austerity flu gnaws away at the entrails of society. What kind of future? The social safety net in England, in the United Kingdom, is being torn at by the money. And in many ways, if we think about it, and I've been thinking about it quite a bit today, everything on this planet is by definition finite. And when the money people declare that they're not getting enough, no matter how much they already have, wealth, you know, we hear these phrases, and I'm sure somebody with a great deal of economics knowledge will take issue with me, but I'm prepared to defend my position. There is no such thing as wealth creation on this planet. There is only wealth transfer. Because wealth is finite. And so, as the rich get ever richer, as their pockets become lined with more and more, it's only natural that we will see that reflected in our world. When the rich get more and keep more, that means fewer public parks. That means a degradation of children's playgrounds, a diminution of public services, of fire and police. And I'm not talking about an American phenomenon either. I'm talking about worldwide. When the oligarchs and the cronies in Egypt began stuffing more and more money into their pockets, the bread going into the mouths of the poor became more scarce. And thus you see what happened last spring. I received emails from both Sandra and Gary over the weekend talking about the fact that this phenomenon has now, oddly enough, spread to, of all places, Israel, where the squeeze is being put on the middle class ever more stridently, day by day by day. And now the Israelis are to the point of going into the street. And there are even some in that movement who understand that they have more in common with Palestinians than they do with the upper reaches of the neoliberal government run by Bibi Netanyahu. That they have more in common with some kid in Ramallah than they do with the life of indolence and leisure led by the ruling class in that country. The ruling class is also rocked on its heels in Syria, where the blood has been flowing freely and the bullets have been flying the same way. Yesterday, Anonymous hacked into the Ministry of Defense website of the Syrian government and delivered a message in English and Arabic to the Syrian people, encouraging them to stand fast and be nonviolent, and calling on the Syrian military to protect the Syrian people lest they be held accountable the same as the one issuing the kill orders, namely the thug and friend of America, Bashar Assad. It spreads and it spreads and it spreads. Of course, it was just after showtime on Friday evening when the news broke that Standard & Poor's, none of the other rating agencies, just Standard & Poor's, had decided, in a process apparently involving more Ouija boards than anything else, well, that and those Ouija boards were greased with a little bit of filthy political money, had decided to downgrade American debt, despite the fact that prior to doing so, the Obama administration had surrendered as hard as it possibly could to every last godforsaken thing that the Republican Party wanted. And describing which, John Boehner said we got 98% of what we wanted. That was late Friday. The markets opened today to what would be described in an old Southern idiom as hell among the yearlings. Losing something on the order of $1 trillion in value over the course of the day. Dumping value unlike any day since the October of 2008 when George W. Dimwit was still in office. You know, several weeks back, maybe months, I suggested that there was value in trying to imagine and foresee, not through magic, but through logic, trying to imagine and foresee what global catastrophe looks like, smells like, tastes like, feels like. Well, you needn't imagine anymore, because it may damned well be here. And while trickle-down economics don't work in the traditional voodoo economic sense that repiglickens like to tell us, wherein if we just let the rich have everything, they'll let some pissy little low-rent money trickle down to us. They will, in short, piss on our shoes and tell us it's raining. While that is bull, It is true that this kind of economic nightmare will trickle down. And it won't trickle, it will pour. Because if you take it as a given that wealth is finite, then whenever you see one of these days where it says that, wow, you know, it was down 10% today, the market lost 10% of its value. What in the hell does that mean? It didn't lose anything. It didn't go anywhere. It didn't disappear. It just changed pockets. And the people whose pockets got emptied are going to come and look for some more pockets to empty to get theirs back. The Dow Jones Industrial Average plummeted in the sixth largest drop in Wall Street's history, or in the Dow's history, the sixth largest drop by 635 points. Oddly enough, the bond market did quite nicely, thank you very much. Of course, some of the losses to see how easy it is to get the language snuck into your own ideas. Some of the losses, it ain't lost. Somebody out there knows exactly where it went, and we know whose pockets they're in. You're just not supposed to know, nor am I. Today, for every stock that rose, 69 of them fell on the New York Stock Exchange. 2.5 billion shares traded hand. Imagine that. I encourage you to go over to TED.com and just look up algorithms and see what pops up. There's a talk about algorithms in our world that you might want to watch. But as I said, we begin the program this evening with the story of two men. Mark Duggan being the one, father of four, shot down in cold blood by London police on Thursday with no answers and precipitating, at least arguably, a stunning degree of violence, building burning, shop looting, what have you. That seemed inclined to spread. But the other story is the answers that we know all too well. The story of James Craig Anderson, 49 years old, worked at an auto plant in Mississippi. His portrait shows a handsome man of middle years, a narrow, well-trimmed mustache, round glasses, neat haircut, a white gold wedding band on his left ring finger. The story doesn't begin at the auto plant in Mississippi, however. The story begins a county away. Miles away from Jackson, Mississippi. In Rankin County, Mississippi. Where a pair of boys, well, not a pair, but a gang of boys, primarily among them Darryl Deadman Jr., and John Aaron Rice, all drinking, there in Rankin County, Mississippi, decided to quit the place where they were drinking with a special premise in mind. Daryl Dedman looked at the group and said, "Let's go fuck with some niggers." Sorry, those are the words. They piled into a pair of vehicles, a green truck and a white Cherokee. They drove 16 miles down Interstate 20 to the western edge of Jackson, Mississippi, which is predominantly and historically predominant an area where black families live. They pulled off the exit ramp of I-20. And the auto plant sits right by the ramp. That's where they saw James Craig Anderson standing near his car. The white teenagers got out of their cars screaming, "White power!" And they beat James Craig Anderson, 49 years old, remorselessly, repeatedly, continuously. And he crawled to his feet. And being a man, stood up. And it's all on videotape. And CNN, whose story this is, CNN has the videotape. Staggers into view in the videotape and walks toward the headlights of the truck, the Dedman pickup truck. How apropos that name, Dedman. At which point, the driver of the truck guns it and runs right over James Craig Anderson, and then speeds away from the scene. Cowardly little teenage night riders that they were. He calls to the other vehicle on his cell phone, laughing. "I ran that nigger over! I ran him over!" They had a bond hearing. Now, this is fascinating. They had a bond hearing. Dedman has just turned 18 years old. He's been charged with murder. He faces a possible double life sentence. He does not. Now, Mississippi has the death penalty. Oh, yes, Lord Jesus, Mississippi has the death penalty. Young Dedman is not facing it and will not face it. They had a bond hearing. Now, I can't speak for Mississippi, but in almost every state I'm aware of, you're entitled to a reasonable bond in all cases, save murder. You're not necessarily entitled to bond in murder, But this young white boy, they had a bond hearing for him. Just wouldn't be right. John Aaron Rice is 18 years old, one of Dedman's accomplices. He's merely been charged with simple assault. That's not even necessarily a felony. But they had a bond hearing for Dedman. And I want to say first and foremost that I understand the right of every... It is a cornerstone of what passes for our judicial system that every person charged is entitled to a zealous defense. And so I certainly don't fault the lawyer for representing Mr. Dedman. But there are some things that lawyers don't have to say in the course of a hearing. Now, I've already told you the hateful words that were used among many, many, many others. And when these things were brought forward at the bond hearing, his lawyer rose to his feet and said he didn't see anything to back up the racial allegations. The police are nothing in Mississippi if they are not polite, if you're the right color. The murder weapon, the Ford pickup truck, was processed by the police, the evidence unit, what have you. And rather than being impounded and held for potential trial, why, the police kindly returned the murder weapon to the family. The other teenagers who were with Dedman and Rice have not been charged. This was just a few Sundays back. London is burning. Jackson, Mississippi is not. Because there is an element of race-based murder in places like Mississippi, Alabama, California, name a state, there is an essence to race-based murder in this country that says, forget it, Jake, it's Chinatown. We know these things happen here, and with the exception of the grieving family, most of this country is numb to it. Most of this country prefers to think, well, hey, wait a minute. You know, we had Dr. King. We gave him a holiday. You know, it's all over now. Remember that rotten, cancer-filled freak Tony Snow declaring that racism was over in America? We're in a place and a time that we may find it rather difficult to tolerate. because, and I don't, you know, don't go running for the bridge or anything, but it's not going to get better anytime soon. Because the people of the United States of America, in large part, are not interested in having it get better. In diverse places, from Tripoli to Damascus to Tel Aviv to London to Athens, people are leaving the shelter of their homes to protest what is being done to them so that the lobster for lunch crowd can have a little more money. In the United States, not so much. We don't do that. We tend to agree with Scotland Yard that getting out in the street and protesting is disgraceful. Oh, and by the way, that Standard & Poor's downgrade we got on Friday, you do know this, right? The guy who runs Standard & Poor's is a die-hard heavyweight donor to Willard Romney. Yeah. And you know that the meme is already going around, well, looky there. We let one of them be president, and they done destroyed our economy. It's a hot, hot summer. And something tells me it ain't gonna cool off anytime soon. 23 minutes before the hour, you're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. We'll be back with your phone calls. The lines are open, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. My God, there's a huge stack of stories. We've barely scratched the surface. But what we began with, I couldn't see any way to begin with anything else, because it has an emblematic quality to it. And if nothing else, let it be said that as blood cries out from the ground for justice, we heard it and we listened. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
City, people that have to call it home, they're the ones I pity. Lord, I'm homesick. Blues are the only songs I ever seem to hear. I get out and walk the street till I get blisters on my feet. I'm southbound.
Quarter before the hour, and we're back. Let's get back at it. Quick email rolling in from Ron in Raleigh. He says, look back in history a little ways, post-civil rights era, and one thing becomes apparent: if you're a man of color, nothing will be done if you're murdered by the authorities. Yes, occasionally the federal government will find that a black man's civil rights have been violated by a bullet. I've always steered clear of the law because I knew that if I was killed, nothing would be done. I didn't want to be laying on a subway platform shot by a transit officer that couldn't tell his Glock from a taser. As it's been said, no justice, no peace. Indeed. To be fair, the authorities in Jackson, Mississippi seem to have no doubt that it was a racially motivated crime that killed a beloved son, a beloved brother, and James Craig Anderson. In London, an internal, an independent police investigative committee is looking at the killing of Mark Duggan. Hence the fact that they now know that the bullet that was lodged in one police officer's radio was a police-issue bullet. Whew. God. Well, let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there.
Hey, Susan.
Can I shift things a bit for a little
while? Sure, why not?
I would like to bring people's attention to the fact that somebody died last night.
Who's that?
Well, everybody, whenever he was mentioned in the news, they called him Maverick. Senator Mark O. Hatfield.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
God, I thought you were going to tell me John McCain was dead.
No. Because he defied his own party just to get elected to governor, for one thing. He's the former governor of Oregon as well as a U.S. senator.
Right.
And in order to run, to be elected the first time, he literally had to take on his own party. They wouldn't nominate him. So he said, fine, we'll just get it on anyway, and he proceeded to win the election. Did basically the same thing for senator after he was term limited out of the post as governor. We would have been happy to keep him. And he spent the next 30 years in the U.S. Senate. Among other things, he stood up to the entire U.S. government and basically stood on the floor of the Senate and said, this war is wrong. I am not going to vote for it. I'm against it, and I will oppose anything to do with it. And he did. He was talking about Vietnam. He was an environmentalist. He cared about the land, Oregon, because he knew that once it's gone, it's gone. He was something else. He was a Republican.
Mm-hmm. In that era when there were good ones occasionally.
Yeah, he was one of the two Republicans who I had any respect for at all. He was a Republican who you could respect and therefore work with. And there's, if you go back in time and look at the legislation, there are huge amounts of bills with his name on them. There's even a bill mandating racial equality in the state of Oregon. You know, they're outlawing discrimination in the state of Oregon. And he not only wrote this bill, he got it passed. And this happened in 1953.
1953.
Yeah, he was a giant. He was a great man, and he died last night, and we will miss him. And I just wish...
How old was he?
He was 89. I just wish we had a few like him. But there's no more Republicans like that. They've been run out. And that is just so sad.
I suppose we could characterize it as sad, Susan, but we can. But you know, the Republican Party.
They're no longer a Republican Party.
No, they're not. Remember, the teabaggers are not grassroots. The teabaggers are well financed, and they're well financed from inside the Republican Party.
Sure.
And the teabaggers shifted the Republican Party by virtue of the willingness of their useful idiots to engage, even with poor spelling, worse grammar, and even nastier intent. I saw a story today that confirms that at any given teabagger gathering, that the white power crowd can almost always be seen in attendance.
Yeah.
And that's fine with the people who organized the teabaggers.
Yeah, I
come one, come all who walk or crawl, you know?
As long as you're white, yeah. The thing that gets me with their latest tactics, I watch these people and their willingness to crash the entire economy. And they only... two words get ringing through my head. Divine wind. That's the English translation of
kamikaze.
Yeah. because
historically
people,
it was historically it was the typhoon wind that blew the invading fleet of, I believe, the Khan, the Chinese fleet of the Khan, back to China and preserved Japan against invasion.
Rather similar
in a way to another island being besieged by a tremendous naval power.
Yeah.
Namely, the Spanish Armada.
Yeah. But the thing that gets me is these people are willing to immolate themselves as long as it's in the Tea Party. Yeah.
Well, and as long as there's somebody that'll tell them that God wants them to, consider, if you will, consider, if you will, yesterday's, what was it called? The Restoration?
Oh, God.
In Houston, Texas, in which, in 100-degree heat, they could only get 30,000 people into a stadium that holds 70-plus. Hey, free air conditioner, just come listen to us talk about Jesus. No thanks, I'll roast.
Yeah,
but there was a poster. There was a poster. There were protesters outside that little clavern.
Yeah.
And the most telling of the ones that I saw was a simple hand-lettered poster, oddly enough, spelled correctly, held by a decent human being that said, "The Bible Belt is also the lynching belt."
Oh, God, I love it.
You know, because quite often lynchings were done with leather belts as much as rope.
Yeah. What gets me is last I heard on Friday there was only something like 8,000 RSVPs. They must have just given out tickets.
Oh, bust them in, I'm sure.
Yeah. Because...
And, I mean, if you saw the photos coming from there, they were there with their hands in their air, in the air, and... One guy had his hands on his head, Susan. I hadn't, and this look of like Jesus was just straight out of the Deus Ex Machina right onto the stage. I hadn't seen a face like that since Don Nealon was coaching West Virginia football, and we watched Don snatch defeat from the jaws of victory in the last 3 seconds of a game. You know, there was an old joke that said, "What do Billy Graham and Don Nealon have in common?" They can both make 60,000 people jump on their feet and yell, "Jesus Christ." But the things that are believed in.
Oh, God, yeah.
By some of the people who spoke there, are, to say the least, breathtakingly hateful. Here we go.
Pretty much right, that was one of them.
God TV host Mike Bickle said that Oprah
is
a forerunner to the harlot movement. Said gay marriage is rooted in the depths of hell. Then there's Doctor, who couldn't put on a Band-Aid without killing somebody, Cindy Jacobs. Now, this is the lunatic who blamed the mass sudden death of blackbirds in Beebe, Arkansas, on the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Okay.
Yeah, she said girl-on-girl kissing is a plague on society.
I'm going to quote something.
Oh, but wait. There's one more. The women in the audience are going to love this. And said that girl-on-girl kissing was a violation of a woman's natural use. Because, see, women don't just exist. They exist to be used.
Okay. I'm gleefully listening to Stephanie Miller's podcast, and she is going on about this particular woman, and she mentions that quote. And she says, as a gay woman, I gotta tell you from the way she mentioned it.
Sounds like she likes it.
Yeah. Sounds like she knows exactly what she's talking about.
But, I mean, there were all manner of lunatics in Houston yesterday. John Benefiel, John Benefiel, who said that the Statue of Liberty is a demonic idol.
Mm-hmm.
And that homosexuality is actually an Illuminati plot.
Hmm.
Get a net.
Steph will be thrilled.
And then, of course, John Starve Hagee was also there.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, the queers are responsible for Hurricane Katrina, right. Dwight McKissick was there. The gay rights movement is a satanic anointment. You know, I just urge Dwight McKissick not to talk about ointments when talking about... No.
Yeah.
Let's see. David Barton was there. He said that Jesus opposed the minimum wage and was a supply-sider.
Oh, gee.
Yeah, charming, ain't it? Then there's Jim Garlow. He was there. And he said that, one of the things, that crazy, I didn't say it at the thing yesterday, but one of the things, one of the crazy things that, that this freak has said is that orphans of the September 11th attacks are like children of gay parents.
Yeah.
And then there's Willie Wooten. Willie Wooten wrote a book about the curse of the African American people. He said that tolerance of homosexuality and immorality begets curses of adultery, incest, children from incestuous union, children born out of wedlock, destroyed virginity, bestiality, homosexuality, and lesbianism.
Thinking of,
and I guess it's all a curse unless he gets to watch.
Probably. I wonder where he got that list. Probably from the Heritage Foundation. There is word coming out of Texas that, unconfirmed reports coming out of Texas that Perry is definitely in. Oh, joy.
Yeah, he's going to announce on Saturday.
Is he going to bring you snakes?
Well, the funny thing is that he's saying he's going to announce, but that's not the same as announcing, because he can go on, and in case anything should go sideways, like we actually find out what happened that caused his wife to kick him out of the governor's mansion that one time.
Mm-hmm.
In case we should actually find that out, he can go on raising money without actually declaring, and if it just turns out that, you know, he has one of those little Anthony Weiner moments or something, he gets to keep the money. He may have been a D student at Texas A&M, but he's learned a little since.
Yeah. No matter what anybody says, the image I am going to have of Governor Rick Perry is, he's gonna be carrying a whole bunch of snakes. I'm sorry. And just with his whole religious thing, to me, that eliminates him as a viable candidate. That should eliminate him from any... Well, I realize it's not going to because of all the freaks out there.
What country do you think you're in? Wait a minute.
Yeah. To any intelligent person listening to this guy prate on about religion and government, that should be enough to disqualify him on the spot. This is not a theocracy, and it was never meant to be one.
But they want one, and they think they have the right to have one, Susan. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah, well, he can go piss off a rope. I'm sorry. He can't have it.
Well, I don't know. It should be a merry chase, you know. At the same time that Rick Goodhair Perry was leading his Christapalooza, well, Michelle Bachmann was going to church.
Mm-hmm.
Did you catch this one?
I probably didn't.
Michelle Bachmann done went to church on Sunday, and she didn't just go to any old church in Iowa. She went to a real good, upstanding, Bible-believing, four-square anti-gay church. And she listened to a preacher who stood in the pulpit and said, God shows his anger from heaven against all sinful wicked people who suppress the truth by their wickedness. And then he showed a video from an ex-gay guy. The reports have it that Marcus Bachmann watched in rapt appreciation.
Yeah, and he was probably playing with himself.
Nah, now, let's not go over the top.
Sorry about that, but I agree. The man's gay dark. No.
Yeah, ding, 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 ding. Well, Susan, have yourself a wonderful evening, dear, and we will talk soon.
Yeah, and there is one last thing I want to mention.
Yes.
Cast your mind back to the WTO riots in Seattle. All these, quote, young people bashing in windows.
Yeah.
With masks. What did they turn out to be?
Agent provocateur?
Anarchists.
Well, and there were some agent provocateur in there as well.
Yeah, but...
Plants.
A big portion of them were anarchists. And anytime I see some guy running around bashing in windows with something across his face, the first thing that pops into my head is, this dude an anarchist?
Well, I don't know. I don't necessarily... Maybe that's the way with some of them. But serious anarchism...
Well, I didn't say it was all of them.
Serious anarchism is not necessarily about bashing in windows and turning over mailboxes.
It is if you're 18.
Nah, that's hooliganism. But what I'm more concerned with is the fact that governments, as I noted, don't know how to contend with nonviolence. They do know how to contend with violence, however,
exactly.
And that's a great way to shut it all down.
Yeah, exactly. And they need to learn, or they are going, like you said, the cities are going to burn. Go back to the 60s. Go back to your history books, people. You're going to need to read up on this, because...
This ain't the 60s, Susan.
Honey, I'm not talking about the 60s.
Unless we're talking about the 1660s.
I'm talking about when they haul... Well, let me put it this way. 1789, 1917.
There's a lot of frustration out there, indeed.
Exactly.
All right. You have yourself a good evening.
Give my love to Agnes and the kids.
All right, and thanks for helping out so very much.
You're more than welcome.
Bye now.
Bye.
News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
The Mississippi thing is just unbelievable and just horrifying. My thing is that, wait a minute, anytime you got more than two black folks involved in any kind of crime, everybody's sent away forever. So I don't understand. Everybody involved in the truck, the girls, all them people. What happened to your associated?
Where's that felony murder rule?
Right. They do that to every other sort of minority. Anytime there's a gang of them doing anything, everybody's charged with the most maximum charge to go on. No matter what they're doing, as long as they're there, they're charged. So now all of a sudden, these people aren't going to be charged? The other ones who are with them?
Well, we don't. I mean, it was more in terms of... haven't been charged.
Yeah, well, no, I'm just saying, though, but, you know, that in itself is gruesome, along with what you said, that they returned the car. Wow. I mean, you know, you hit it right on the head when you said, well, there's an expectation for this sort of shit, so shrug and yawn, right?
Yeah, it kind of makes me sick that I said that.
Well, no, but that was right on target, because, hello, this poor man. Wrong place at the wrong time and wrong color, and just run over, killed like some sort of, oh my God, I didn't even know what to say. And where's the, media on this? This happened on the 7th, wasn't it, or something like that?
Yeah, the last...
A month ago.
Yeah, last couple of Sundays or so.
And it's just kind of like, excuse me? This just reminds me of that poor man who was dragged. Remember that murder in Texas?
Oh, or the one who was dragged in South Carolina.
You know, it just goes on. And I thought I would add, although there's a gun involved in this one, but the police shot up some teenager with 10 shots right in the middle of Hunter's Point here in California, in San Francisco. You heard about that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that kid was shot, bled right in front of a crowd of people. Police wouldn't have approached the dude. He just was just some the most horrifying thing I've ever seen. Granted, he shot at the cops, apparently, but, I mean, 10 bullets left there to bleed to death in agony. Just, you know, horrific. I just don't even know what to say. And then this person here that you're talking about, I didn't even know about this. And I'm stunned. I'm like, I'm thinking it's Mississippi. Like, wow. I mean, who are these teenagers? What rock are they under?
Well, of course, now dig it. Okay, the one kid, Deadman, is reported to be 5 foot nothing and 130 pounds. And I saw a photo of him. He's got these sort of dead but piercing blue eyes with this little half a grin on his face.
Well, no, but so they beat this man up first, right?
Yeah. And when he staggered to his feet, the kid gunned the truck and ran him over and killed
him
instantly.
And there was some two chicks in the truck.
Yeah.
And they're just what? Just at home drinking mint juleps? I mean, what's happening?
I think probably that.
What the fuck? Anyway, oh my God. That's just...
Something occurred to me as I was reading this, because okay, I cried. I sat there reading it crying. But I got to thinking, of course, of another Mississippi murder, and you probably know where I'm going. Emmett Till.
Oh, yeah. No, that's...
And, you know, they brought Emmett Till's body back to Chicago, and his mother said, don't you close that casket.
Well, yeah, I mean...
I want that casket opened.
And that went a long way to really rev up the movement. We know this.
And the funeral's already come and gone. But you know what? Bless his soul, that man's casket should have been left open, too. And maybe time one of these things happens, the casket ought to be left open.
No, but the sort of general acceptance of this, be it this horrible hate crime or this person that shot up and killed 8 folks. You heard about that?
No, what?
Yeah, 8 people were killed. I don't know if it was a family thing. I can't remember exactly where it was. It was in the Midwest, but it was like 8 people killed. And I'm sure maybe somebody might send in. Anyway, things are not good. It's just horrific. And this thing in London, I'm like, damn, they messing up my old stomping grounds. Brixton, Peckham, and these people have lost their damn minds. But there's a long history of the pigs in England killing black people, Bob. Trust and believe that. When I lived there, I was forever like, damn, they be shooting up black people in this country. And so we're back to that again.
Yeah, dude was in a cab. He was...
No, it's incredible, that story. And the whole, like, pigs with their... Oh, there was a bullet. Come on now. It's too much. They effed up big time. They ignored the family. You got off...
48 hours.
Yeah, well, you know what?
Even LAPD would send somebody out within the first 48 hours to talk with the family.
And then I'm like, haven't these people watched any episodes of Prime Suspect? You know what I'm saying? What? What's happening? It's 2011, you killing up brown people. Ain't you learned? In the mid-80s, London blew up, erupted behind shit like this. Now you have the same ingredients going on. You got youth with no hope. If you a young person and you ain't well off in England right now, what's your future?
I wasn't out of line asking that question.
Oh, no, it's pretty bad. I mean, it's it's not good. And those Hackney is a horrific place. Trust me. I'm like, yuck. And so all these places, you know, apparently it's spread it. It's into Birmingham now. And now all of a sudden Cameron, asshole, coming back from vacationing in Tuscany. Come on, yo.
Oh, no. People, Tuscany? Please.
Yeah. His ass is flying back tonight. You know, not a politician around. I was reading The Guardian. They said they can't find not one Paulo to step up and talk about this shit. They all on vacation. Well, they like, good morning, bitches. You coming back to a firestorm. You know, they cutting services like they know tomorrow, thinking there's no consequences. And all they can say is, oh, this is bad behavior, blah, blah. Fuck that. I mean, it's well past bad behavior if 40 cities are going up in flame. I mean, I don't know how many cities, but it seems to be spreading. And I sent you that, I don't know if they were still showing that cam, but some of the pictures I saw on that cam was like, damn. Cars burning up, shops burning up.
Oh, a whole corner, you know, building completely engulfed in flame, just lighting up the night.
Yeah, you know, rows of pigs running up and down the street. You know what I'm saying? I was just like, wow, you know. And I was talking to my friend Linda on Facebook, and I said, you know, what's happening? And she said, well, I'm in Barcelona. And all she could say was, damn, did I renew the fire insurance for my home? I was like, damn. You know, Linda is like old school, you know, way back, kind of like, yikes, who made good. But she just said, yeah, she's not surprised, you know. And she said, I might have to stay in Spain for a bit. I said, you might want to watch out over there, too.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. It's getting to the point where there's nowhere safe.
Right.
Because eventually these global greed mongers, I mean, they have got the world turned upside down and are shaking out the pockets at this point, aren't they, Sandra?
Oh yeah, no, and I don't mean to be glib about it. You know, I think that the rioting, you know, has a downside, mainly people destroying their own communities. You see, it's like Westminster is that away. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Wrong neighborhood.
I always get upset about that. You know, it's like, oh my God, you know what I mean? Move it uptown. But, and I know that still sounds glib, but what I'm saying is that, why are they surprised? You're going to cut, squeeze. You got Murdoch, you got the police being corrupt. Everyone can see this.
Yeah, and I mean, some of this stuff begins to look like part of a pattern if you're just crazy enough to see it that way. You know, what was it, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, that the head of Scotland Yard has to take a powder because it turns out he's in Murdoch's pocket?
Right, the top and second person. So when they go around shooting citizens, you look and you see, okay, wait, they bailed out the banks, the cops are corrupt, fucking the media is hacking dead people's phones, and you're going to shoot my family member, and I'm just going to do what? So this is the thing. It's like, I don't want to hear the indignation.
Right, and the first thing out of their mouths, instead of meeting with the family, first thing out of their mouths is, well, you know, he was a drug dealer. I mean, there was drug language used on his Facebook page. He was called a soldier.
Yeah, no.
Jesus, I guess they've never heard Onward Christian Soldiers, have they?
Well, I mean, it's just too much. It's sort of the attitude, the arrogance, the sort of mistreatment of citizens. You know, at some point, people put up with a lot. So for them to go off the deep end like they're doing now, it's just build up, and I don't even call it a riot now. I'm on to rebellion, okay? And listen, let me just read this one little quote from Lord Acton. And remember, where you have a concentration of power in a few hands, all too frequently men with the mentality of gangsters get control. History has proven that. All right? Lord fucking Acton. And I'm like, and cut. So, yeah, we in a lot of trouble up in here. And I looked at Obama today, I shake my head. I was like, oh, my God.
Dude. You mean middleman?
Stop it on that shit. Was like out of control. That person, Tom Tomorrow, wow, he on a big run with that.
You know,
so much to work with.
We talked about it. I'm still not over the costume that he puts on middleman. You know,
no, that's not right.
The little white suit, you know.
Yeah. No, but the lefty that they brought in today, you know, that was wrong.
Suddenly.
What did he look like?
Yeah.
What did he look like?
Paul Krugman, maybe?
I don't know, but it was just like, dude. And the whole sort of, do you hear anything? Huh? What? No, and the boner. I mean, all of it is fantastic, and everyone should see that for some comic relief because it's really sardonic, but we got to get some laughs here. Because that shit ain't funny.
Oh, the minute I saw this, I was absolutely ruined, and it's like, oh, Sandra's got to see this.
Oh, no, thank you so much. That was a good laugh for a day. That was very disturbing, because I'm very disturbed at this S&P shakedown, because that's what the fuck it is. Them are some gangsters, and I blame the Obama administration for not prosecuting their asses. Let me tell you, they said yeah, to a bunch of fraudulent mortgages, gave it AAA, and said, please invest. All the investors from around the world invested, and oh, shit, they're just crap. And that started the whole chain of events of this fucking crash. And now, because you didn't prosecute them or do anything to these rating agencies, your ass is being told, oh, no, we're going to bring down your credit rating until you finish destroying the welfare state in America. And unfortunately for us, I think these politicians are riding cahoots, because minutes later, I'm hearing, oh, we need to...
Well, did you see the New York Times Sunday Magazine article by Drew Weston about Obama and the story he didn't tell and all of that?
Yes.
And you know, the defend Obama at all costs side. And I like to think that, you know, I'll defend him on some stuff and I'll blister him on others, because, you know, I just believe in being fair.
Well, no, it's breaking down, though, with that article. I was like, when I read that, I said, oh, shit, it's coming on anyway.
But I read it, and I kept, and I've just gotten to this place, Sandra, where I read these things, and inevitably there's a suggestion of he should have done it this way, or he will do it that way. And I've just gotten to this place in my soul where I go, yeah, but, because he's not that guy.
Right, no, I was looking at that thinking, God, they're still on that meme, too. It's like, wake up. He's doing what he wants to do. The biggest mistake he made, though, was he misread the Republicans. Because he thought he was going to get the grand plan. But that they blew that shit in his face. And that's where it all unraveled for Obama, is that he thought he was going to get the $4 trillion, but they wouldn't have a bar of it.
Yeah, but look what he thought he was going to get last December, Sandra.
Well, I understand, but... You know, I still think that he is trying to, alter the safety net. I mean, he's the one that put all that on the table, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not Boehner. So.
And I'm so we're not that far from January, so what are we going to do about unemployment then?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
What kind of cave and capitulate do we have then? Do we extend the Bush tax cuts to, what, 2020?
I have no idea, but I don't know if you know about S&P. They basically said, well, they couldn't come to some understanding about raising taxes. No one seems to talk about that part of the S&P report. Have you noticed?
Oh, well, right. Because, you know, John Kerry shows up, of course. You know, John Kerry is the... Jesus Christ.
No, he's despicable.
No, John Kerry shows up on Meet the Press, and, you know, you really want to, you know, when you've got a message that you want to drive home, you really want to drive it home with a guy who talks like this. And so he comes up with the signature line, this is the Tea Party downgrade. God almighty, anybody, send Al Franken out to say that. And I'm not crazy about Al Franken right now, but send Al Franken out to say that. That, you know, because he could at least say it in half the time.
Or Barney Franks. I'm always a big deal.
Send out Barney, sure. You know, send out Barbara Boxer. I don't care.
Yeah, no, they're all too busy trying to gut the social safety net, though. I mean, the idea that Panetta's going to come on TV... talking about, well, you need to cut Social Security before you cut the Pentagon. Have you remember when I told you that this is going to pit the Pentagon against a grandma? Am I wrong?
No. You get the toaster of all toasters for that one. Yeah.
Yeah, man. I was like, oh, snap. You know, some more wonderful analysis from the Horn family up in this mug.
And there you go. You got and they run out Joe Lieberman to advance that one.
The horror show that he is.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I don't. You know, I mean, the thing about this, I'm a bit concerned about Obama because I was looking at him speak, and I'm like, and cut. I think they lost, the market dropped real quick, another 100 points while he was speaking. I'm thinking, oh, my God. And then it ended up at 630?
658.
Listen, I mean, I don't really know, I don't know too many people who have a whole bunch of stocks, but I guess people have 401s. I mean, it's just so nasty, all of it, and the sort of, now Moody's is sort of making noises about downgrading, and it's
right, because
it's so
S&P made it okay. Moody's,
it's so gangster, though.
Yeah, Moody's never would have made that move on their own, but S&P opened the door, and I'm sorry, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. Anybody who's listened to this program long enough knows that. I avoid those things like the plague, but the fact of the matter is, the guy who runs S&P is a big-time Willard Romney donor. Now, daggum it, please.
No, but listen, let me tell you something. The police, the Milan office of Moody's and Standard & Poor's in Italy, okay? Now, some people are trying to fucking fight back. They said these people are messing with our sovereignty. They raided the office, trying to accuse them of, not abiding by regulations. So there is a little pushback, but the rating agencies are just, they're part and parcel of the whole criminal racket. If you want an agency to rate your creditworthiness as a sovereign, make it an agency out of the UN, not some for-profit.
No, I mean, does anybody, again, Sandra, this is another example of us failing to learn from past obvious mistakes. Does anybody remember the name Arthur Anderson?
Right. No, I mean, it's too obvious. This is a joke. And also, the markets are so messed up, but they are hammering Bank of America, which is very interesting. That bitch is going to have to be broken up. Okay.
Well, if they don't just spontaneously combust, they're moving. I mean, with this $10 billion suit from AIG, they are moving into bailout territory. So what are we just gonna? Are we gonna? I mean, we can't find any money to bail out for jobs or 99ers or anything, Sandra. But you want to lay down a $5 bill that says we'll find us some bailout money for Bank of America?
Hey, I don't know what they're going to do. See, this is the problem that we're up against with the situation now, is there is no backstop for these entities now. And I think that all this sort of, the one silver lining about this debt ceiling business is that people are a little bit more aware, just because we've been drowned, hit with this day in and day out. So I'm not too sure how Obama's going to rock up and say, oh, we need to bail out Bank of America. You think so?
Well, the remarks that he made with regard to Standard & Poor's almost made me feel sorry.
Oh God, you mean that we're always a AAA country or whatever?
Yeah.
Gibberish.
No matter what some agency may say, we've always been and always will be a AAA country.
And you knew it was over with when he started talking about what the American people is able to stand. I'm like, oh, no. His shit is desperate when that's all you can reach for. I thought to myself, you ain't got nothing else, Obama? That's it?
Don't be bringing the Winston Churchill blood, sweat, toil, and no.
Oh, my God.
Because I don't know about you, but I'm not willing to do the blood, sweat, toil, and tears for a bunch of Lark's Vomit Canapé crowd on Wall Street. No.
Yeah, exactly. And also, I am so sick of this sort of shared sacrifice.
No, that one goes to the head of your list, okay? Do that for me. When we're done with the phone conversation, because
right.
I know you're keeping the list, go and put shared sacrifice at the top of that damn thing.
And it's too much because no one, since when is losing 10% of your $10,000 a year benefit and access to sort of a home caregiver equivalent to a little bit of change that some fucking billionaire might lose if you raise the rate 3%? How dare they make that equivalent? I am, you know what I mean? And no one challenges it. I'm so stunned. I'm like, what? It's sickening to hear these rich fuckers talk about it, like, what's his name on Tweety? They call him Tweety.
Oh, Matthews.
Yeah, him talking about means testing the different programs out of his billionaire mouth. I'm like, ew, shut the F up.
Well, and it's the same thing with that phrase shared sacrifice coming out of any of their mouths.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Because the only ones talking shared sacrifice are the people who ain't going to be doing the sacrificing and are going to be sharing what comes out of our hides.
Yeah, no, it's no shared sacrifice at all. I mean, it's just horrific that Boehner is like, oh, yeah, we got 98% of what we wanted, you know, where they can sit up there and go on TV and feel okay about cuts only. And that these rich assholes don't have to contribute anything, and somehow that's okay. You know, I don't know how much longer that's going to be okay. Even in this country, I think people are like, oh, my God. You know what I'm saying? We'll see. I'm not saying it's going to go off like London. I just think that...
Let's get something straight, Sandra. This country does not have enough character to take to the streets like they did in Damascus, or like they're doing in Tel Aviv.
That's another guy. Yeah, I know. Thanks for bringing that up, because I got to tell you, the pictures are just out of this world. And it's interesting because Netanyahu, he don't know what the hell to do. He know what to do with the...
Is he in Tuscany too?
Well, no. He's there. He knows what to do with the Palestinians, but he don't know what to do with this. With his neoliberal ass. He can't even understand. The only thing he understands is that today they raised the price of fuel again.
Yeah, now Gary sent me an article that I found interesting. It was a commentary from Haaretz
that's left. Let people know that's...
Yeah, that is. It's a very left-leaning. But they talked about the fact that it looked like he was playing true to form, because no sooner did these protests break out than there was a shooting incident on the Lebanese border.
That's what I'm saying, and this is why it's even... Remember, I don't know if I mentioned this to you a while back, but there was like rumors around that Netanyahu was about to sort of, you know, bomb Iran. It was like they wouldn't put it past him. Well, this is not helping that cause, okay? I'm all happy to see the Israelis stand up to get a better economic justice, but I'm scared that this crazy that's running their country might go decide and start a war. There's always that option, you see?
Well, and in discussing, you know, why all this is going down, did you see the quote from that ultra-right-wing, right next door to a Nazi, Avigdor Lieberman?
Oh, he's horrifying. What did he say?
I don't see what people are so upset about. The cafes are all full.
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did.
Oh, listen, you know what? He's a lunatic. So that's a lunatic talking, really scary racist. They don't know what time it is. You don't get 300,000 people just rolling out for a stroll. That's serious. That's equivalent to 10 million people doing that here, if you relate it to the population.
Yeah, and that's also not, you know, wild-eyed Palestinians. Those are Israeli citizens.
Well, you remember, though, that Israel, when it began, had a pretty much cradle-to-grave type of welfare system there, right?
It was a welfare state.
Yeah, you signed up and fought for your country, and they took care of you. Okay, the take care of you part is now obliterated, but your ass still got to go fight.
Yeah, you're going to do your 2 years in the IDF.
Right, but no one's going to be wanting to do that when they are starving, they can't get a job, they can't get a house. You see what I mean? So their bargain is also being ripped apart. So Israel has a lot to lose, though, because if they don't have fresh bodies, you understand what I'm saying? It could be a problem.
a huge one, you know, and I mentioned that one sign that the article, it was a Guardian article, wasn't it? Reference one sign being carried in the group said it in Hebrew, and it said it in Arabic. Egypt is here.
Listen, no, that is.
You send that photo to Bibi Netanyahu and see how long it takes before he calls out for a fresh pair of shorts.
Well, I mean, it's just, you know, one country after another country after another country. This neoliberal stuff is horrible, and it doesn't work. And if you wed that with this sort of decimation that's happening in the market, you know, it's all coming undone. The other thing you need to look at is the sort of huge, I mean huge, bubble that's going on in China. God help us if that goes. Everyone always talking about China. Oh, yeah, banking system's different. Hello, there is more debt in some of the smaller towns than and you can possibly imagine. So the system there isn't as tight as you might think.
No.
Have you seen the? Didn't I send you the ghost towns of like?
Yeah.
Thousands upon thousands of structures built that are just completely empty.
Exactly. And of course, the Chinese government weighed in right after the Standard & Poor's announcement and said the United States has to get its fiscal house in order.
Yeah, well, of course they did. They said stop spending on missiles. Of course they will. I mean, you know, I always remember China because that quote that what's the name of the leader? They asked. I just remember the quote.
Jiang Zemin or Deng Xiaoping?
I'll look up the quote. I can't remember. It was about the French Revolution. He basically said, we're still waiting to see. And it's just like,
He knows. He knows.
Chinese, you know. And it's sort of, I don't know. And you know, the whole meme, like you said, it's like, oh, damn, you know, a Negro's in charge and he's destroying our country. I'm like, no!
But you know,
as I'm dusting off the passport, you understand what I'm saying?
No popcorn eating in England for Sandra, I don't think.
No, I'm now eyeballing New Zealand again.
Yeah, there it's just earthquakes.
Well, not only that, but you can't go. I'm too old. You know, I'm like you. I'm too old to go anywhere at this point. But I don't know. I'm so disturbed. I'll let you go, but I have to leave it on some levity. Now, did you have a look at that article?
Yeah, I did.
From Bloom, Tiger Woods?
Yeah.
Come on now. That shit was, I was like, God damn, when it rains, it pours.
The Swiss watch manufacturer has dumped him. But the thing that struck me is that Tiger's been dumped by Gatorade. He's been dumped by Tag Heuer. He's been dumped here and there.
But
I did love the little optimistic upbeat in the story, Sandra, where it said, last month, however, he did sign an Inca deal to promote a muscle rub from a Japanese corporation. And I thought, my God, because I immediately flashed on Bill Murray in Lost in Translation.
Yeah.
Sitting there, take after take. When I need to relax, I drink Santori. You know, and you can just see Tiger flying off to Tokyo, shooting take after take of an ad that's going to be that's going to be displayed on some godforsaken jumbotron in the Ginza, of Tiger rubbing the lotion on his skin. You know.
Oh God! I mean, the thing is that the guy who won that tournament has that Steve Williams as his caddy. I was like, damn, that's too much. Since he was his diarrhea of the mouth, that guy can't shut up.
No, but I got a feeling that Scott Adams is not going to be quite as exciting as Tiger was.
Well, no, I know, but it's just, I just thought it was like, you know.
But talk about power behind the throne. Maybe it really does matter when he says, no, use the niblick.
Well, I think it's more that swing coach that he fought, that he lost a while back. Well, really famous one.
Oh yeah.
God, I can't remember his name, but I mean that's when it also started going downhill for Woods. Also, all his steroids he's been using. No.
Nah, that had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, he stopped using them, and now his body's breaking down. So, anyway, I don't mean to go on about.
If you see another story pop out about Tiger shoots the muscle rub commercial in Japan, or if any of our listeners in Japan should happen to see that one playing on local TV, I want to know about it because you know I'm claiming that one right now. He rubs the lotion on his skin or else he gets, you know.
Yeah, and cause it used to
or else he comes in 37th again.
And they pay like, you know, what, 5 million yen for the commercial or something crazy, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And the thing is, I mean, just sit and think about it. Really? A muscle rub cream in Japan? This is a guy who was able to pick and choose his endorsements. I mean, Tag Heuer watches? Really? I mean that you know those aren't on the counter. Those aren't on the counter at Penny's next to the Timexes.
No, I bought a lot of knockoffs when I was in Bangkok.
Hey, buddy, you want to buy a watch?
Yeah. Well, you can get all anyway. So yeah, no, they're great, but the real ones are really expensive.
And they just don't want Tiger to sell them for him anymore.
Well, I just. Tiger, you know.
I mean, what kind of an advertising campaign can you build around him for a Swiss watch? You know, when Tiger's got to hook up with another prostitute, he wants to make sure he's on time. That's why he uses Tag Heuer.
Oh, God. Well, but just think about the whole idea of Switzerland demanding some standard stop, actually. But that's another story. You know.
I know.
Anyway, listen, have a good evening.
All right, you take care, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye now. Line's open if you want to jump in on this Monday conversation. You know the number, 877-443-2366. Just to jump back for a minute, because it is very visual, and you can go look at it at your leisure, but I just want to look at it some more. Look up Tom Tomorrow, Daily Coast. He's got a Daily Coast page. This Modern World. He's really hit his stride with middleman. Barack Obama in that little white, the unitard suit with the earphones in it, reminiscent of Woody Allen's movie. Oh, come on! It was set in the future. All the furniture was ugly, and everybody wore these kind of suits. But it's. The moderately exciting adventures of middleman. And Obama standing there. If they bring a knife to the fight, I bring a reasonable bipartisan compromise. This week, debtpocalypse deferred. You can almost hear the Batman music behind it, can't you? Our hero and his esteemed arch rival have just survived a bruising battle. And of course, Boner is orange. I had hoped to use this occasion to reach a grand bargain, but your side's reluctance to accept my preemptive compromises proved most vexing. What chance did either of us have against the awesome power of the Tea Party? True enough, but in the end we arrived at a very reasonable solution, a bipartisan supercommittee, which must achieve compromise lest they trigger draconian cuts in both defense and domestic spending. But not, of course, tax increases. There are limits to compromise. Suddenly, in bursts the one villain with whom middleman will never compromise, the dissatisfied leftist. The dissatisfied leftist, of course, has the little thing across his X-ray glasses across his eyes. He's got brown hair and a beard, of course. You know, has to have a beard. That'd be like, you know, Paul Krugman. Seriously, middleman, the GOP was ready to drive the economy into a ditch rather than make the slightest concession on revenue. And now you're betting everything on their willingness to compromise next time? Are you kidding me? Do you hear a vague whining sound as if an unseen insect has somehow gained access to the room? No, I really do not. Right, me neither. Dissatisfied leftist. Sigh. Next time, super committee stalemate! No one could have... Oh, you know. Tune in next time when Bob reads the comic strip again. Sorry, I love middleman. I hope Tom Tomorrow just works that thing and works it and works it. And, by the way, what Sandra and I mentioned... If you have not read the Sunday New York Times piece, it's I guess, the guy's name is Drew Wethen. It's worth the effort because you know it's another instance of somebody else. And, you know, this guy's fairly intelligent. He's a psychologist at Emory. He talks about the value of framing in terms of storytelling and in terms of appealing to emotions as opposed to bare intellect. But he seems to be one of these people who thinks that Barack Obama just was somehow misguided or got bad advice. And I'm done with that. I accept Barack Obama for who Barack Obama is. And Barack Obama is an extremely ultra conservative Democrat. Now, since he's still calling himself a Democrat, that means that he does have to at least nod toward things like gay rights. He has to nod toward things like a woman's right to choose. But on military affairs, pure hawk. My God, how sickening it was to see that a helicopter with 30 people in it was shot down in Afghanistan. 21 of them members of SEAL Team 6. You know, I told you I've been on a Dune reading kick lately. That was not the best thing for me to be reading when I read that story. Because the only thing that guy came up with was, or the thing that just jumped all over me, for those of you who have read Dune, is that an Imperial thopter full of Imperial Sardaukar had been shot down by the Fremen. And then that line from Dune. God made Dune to train the faithful. Not lost on me that the Fremen leader in Dune, Paul Muad'Dib, goes blind. And the Taliban are led by what? Oh yeah, a blind guy in the desert. Whew. You know, there's just some stuff you don't whisper into the little ears of the universe. You know what I mean? It's just sad. Those people did not have to die. Those people had no business being there. We never should have gone into Afghanistan, and we should have goddamn well gotten out a long time ago. But instead, we'd rather have what? Oh, yeah, plane loads of our elite going down in flames because they flew into what's now being described as a Taliban trap. Yeah. Right back to the phones in a matter of seconds. A couple of emails coming in. Going back to the girls in Mississippi that Sandra was asking about. What are they doing? Just sitting home sipping mint juleps? David in Tennessee. Those girls in Mississippi, that ain't the sort of drink that drinks mint juleps. They're more the Bud Light on the stoop sort with Toby Keith blasting from the house. And the other story that Sandra mentioned, a neighborhood whack job in Ohio had a running estate dispute with family and friends. Having snapped, he went next door, gunned down a girlfriend, moved on to some kin. He lost a gun battle with cops to take the body count to 8. But see, these are all isolated incidents, and none have anything whatsoever to do with the others. They're all just little installment payments on our little butcher's bill with the devil that we call gun ownership. Okay? That's all that is. Pay no attention. This has no common thread or theme running about it. That's just how this... Yeah, sure. By the way, David in Tennessee noting trouble in merry oldie England, the youth of the U.K., got very, very close to taking it to the streets when Cameron got close to doubling tuition for upper ed in the United Kingdom. It essentially stops university for two-thirds of U.K. kids in a year or two. So you're 19. Got future? I might not so much. Cheers. This is David in Tennessee. What do you do? with regard to Bank of America and AIG, Kathy in Arizona. She says, AIG suing Bank of America is like the Gotti family putting a hit on a Gambino. I think we may have the working metaphor now. And Andy in Redwood City. Mr. Bob, at the top of S&P, management has been captured by the Chamber of Commerce and the issuers in which it rates. The mantra from Chairman and CEO Terry McGraw III when Republicans were in control was to promote and strengthen the U.S. capital markets, not to take an objective, non-biased look at the businesses or the capital markets. It's strange, now that Democrats control the majority of our government, the ideology has changed to denigrate and implode the U.S. capital markets. Note, Mr. McGraw contributes much time and energy to the goals and mission of the Chamber of Commerce. He was a former chairman of the Chamber's Business Roundtable and outsourcing and chairman of the Emergency Committee for American Trade, ECAT. He's held high-level positions in the Chamber. His specialty is outsourcing the jobs of Americans. He outsourced extensively to India, sending financial number-crunching jobs overseas. No wonder S&P missed $2 trillion in surplus. Do you think that maybe, just maybe, the downgrade was throwing a bone to his Republican buddies at the Chamber? Shouldn't we question the timing of the downgrade? You betcha, when Obama got in, $10.7 trillion was already racked up in total debt from Bush. And S&P wants Obama to shave off $4 trillion to $10.3 trillion? Not a peep out of S&P when Bush was in office. By the way, Mr. McGraw is an inheritance baby. McGraw-Hill, Grandpa, started the firm, and he inherited the business and his wealth the old-fashioned way from Daddy. Yeah, by the way, yeah, that's one of those ugly little statistics that's out there. Say what you will about Barack Obama, but 7% of the financial mess is money he spent. 93% is money Bush spent. But that one crashed our credit. Ron in Raleigh. Bob, you probably don't remember, but the person that Barack Obama reminds me of the most is former senator from Massachusetts, the first black senator post-Reconstruction, Edward Brooke. That is how far the center has been dragged to the right. Wasn't he the one that Barbara Walters had the affair with? That came out a couple of years ago? Yeah. Shame on me for remembering him in that fashion. David in Tennessee, when Elon asked Tiger, "You know what time it is?" He had only to look at his Tag Heuer watch. Hi, I'm Tiger Woods. Whenever my muscles ache, really, he got an icy hot contract. Whew. So, and Betsy noting, Texas Betsy, our blogger, young Israelis still want to serve. That will not change anytime soon. I don't doubt it. But the idea that the promise of what came afterward has been basically disavowed, that cannot fail to have consequences, unless the youth in Israel are even more shallow than the youth in the United States. Because, you know, we have been here before. This, everything that we're seeing the Republicans do now is a function of us living the old motto that those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. Now, why would we want to teach the history of the Great Depression and what godforsaken Republicans did to this country once so that they might not ever be able to do it again? Well, we didn't teach it. We didn't learn it. A couple of generations outright forgot it. And that makes it possible for them to do it all over again, and this time with a vengeance. Jesus Christ, you want to know how bad it is? There's this goofy blonde woman whose last name is Hoover, who is the great-granddaughter of Herbert Hoover, who actually has a book out there talking to America's youth, explaining to them that the Republican Party is really where they need to be, because the Republican Party of her great-grandfather's day, Herbert effing Hoover, has lessons that they need to learn, and that the Republican Party is there for them. Get me a drink. Back to the phones before I lose my mind. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Cossack, what's up, man?
Not much, self.
Just trying to keep the screaming to a bare minimum.
I know that feeling.
Well, you know, Agnes comes running back and, you know, are you okay, honey? You know, she worries.
I understand that. You know, they keep on talking about the fact that Social Security is in trouble, right? We're running out of money. And yet, unless you've been holding out on us, you realize that you pay Social Security tax on every penny that you earned.
Right.
Right. But once you get to 106,000 some odd, that's it.
Right.
You don't pay a penny more. Why the hell don't they just remove the cap?
You know, there are simple and elegant solutions out there, Cossack. Like, why don't we start talking about putting the payroll tax back on? And then let's talk about making it a point higher. Because if you make it, I mean, and these are the kinds of things that, you know, actuarial types who have ink-stained pocket protectors and things you really get excited about. And it's exciting, really, because if you added one more percentage point to the Social Security tax, God almighty, the thing would be solvent for 100 years. And all of this Sturm und Drang about the failure of Social Security, yada, 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 would go away. And then we could address ourselves to the issue of Medicare, which we can actually solve not by shrinking eligibility, by raising the eligibility age, but by making it available to everyone. No, I'm not yelling at you. I mean, you know this as well as I do.
You know, it, like I said, just move, let people making $5 million a year pay on every dollar that they make the same rate as Social Security. Taxes!
And then all the billionaires have to do is live to be 200 and then collect every penny back.
Well, the thing is, the reason that the money passed up doesn't give a shit is because, you know, very obvious, they don't need Medicare. They don't need Social Security. And that's not even pocket change. That's less than what they have in the options of the sofa.
Oh, without, yeah, no, they've got it, yeah, they've got it stuffed away in the mattresses or whatever. But remember, there's one thing about that vast wealth, and that is that with increasing health care costs, you cannot always assume that the wealthy won't need Medicare. And of course, the prime example is who, Cossack? Well, Ayn Rand.
Yeah.
Because she had made no small chunk of change off of, you know, all those stupid science fiction books that she wrote. Okay, but a social worker sat down and talked to her in her late age and said, listen, honey, let's get you signed up on Social Security and Medicare lickety-split, because if you get bad sick all of a sudden, your book earnings are not going to be sufficient to care for you in a time of extremis. And so, using her husband's name, Ayn Rand signed up for Social Security and Medicare, and went on to be the darling of the right wing.
Right. And she died on both Social Security and Medicare.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's how brainless her adoring minions are. They don't see this, or they don't know this, or they consciously block it out. that Eve Darling took part of the state that she spent her entire life railing against.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, you get to pay payroll taxes on every last penny that you earn. These SOBs, after they hit 106,000, that's it. They don't pay anything.
Yeah, and you know the one factor out of that 106 number that drives me craziest.
Hmm.
I don't know. We need a special law. And even if we don't raise it, even if we don't raise that threshold for everybody in America to everything you make,
mm-hmm.
I think it would be appropriate, Cossack, to pass a piece of legislation that says members of Congress, members of the House, and members of the Senate shall pay Social Security tax on every penny of their federal salary. Does that work for you?
Oh, yeah. The thing is, like, my brother worked in federal law enforcement for 25 years and retired. He does not live in the lap of luxury. We're not sitting here on the fantail of a boat sipping mint juleps. And yet it's people like him that they're accusing of just that. That we're breaking the system. No, you assholes are breaking the system because you don't want to pay into it. You don't want to pay for what you get.
Exactly.
Like I said, for a lot of these rich SOBs, they don't care because they can afford to get a helicopter to go from here to there when the roads no longer work. I mean, for one thing, Eisenhower, you know, for all of his faults, he was intelligent enough to build the interstate road system. Do you know why he did that, by the way?
Yeah, it was a defense authorization.
Right, but do you know why he was so interested?
Because he had seen the incredible efficiency of the Autobahn during the course of the Second World War.
And because in the 20s, he had been part of an army convoy from New York to California, and it took him something like 60 days to get from New York to California on the roads that were then extant. They were in such atrocious shape. So he knew personally what it looked like if you don't have a decent road system in your country.
Yeah, Route 66 is a cute song, but
it was a piece of crap.
Yeah, it was two-lane road. The yeah. Lincoln Highway across what, PA? Two-lane road.
Yeah.
You know, you go through Wheeling, West Virginia, there's still an exit for National Road. Because there was a time in this country where this country had a national road.
Correct.
Then we had two national roads.
But, I mean, you know, this is the disturbing thing, Bob. I remember when they were building the interstate highway system. I remember when they were building the Woodrow Wilson Bridge over the Potomac. I remember watching them build it.
Inspiring, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I happened to actually get to catch Bill Maher's show Friday night, and you know, Neil deGrasse Tyson is an astronomer and an astrophysicist.
Yes.
And he offered a compelling argument for funding the hell out of NASA. And that was, you know, because that was another one of those things that inspired the American people. Every now and then, we need to be inspired. You know, any good parade organizer, Cossack, understands that when, you know, the annual, I don't know, Black Walnut Festival comes along, or the Strawberry Festival, or the Huckleberry Festival, and you have the big parade on Saturday morning, right?
Yeah.
Well, the one damn thing you make sure you do is you get some shiny new cop cars, and you get your nice new shiny pumping fire truck, and you drive that thing down Main Street in the parade.
Yeah.
Because it serves as a tangible reminder that people's tax dollars are doing things.
Well,
on the other hand, however,
mm-hmm.
You can't, for instance, take your local budget for hungry children and just march the little well-fed children down the street in that parade, because that's welfare. I mean, there are things, that, and that drives me crazy. Because you know what, if I was running a county, I would want well-fed children in my parade. Because that's something to be proud of. But the fact of the matter remains that the United States, and people generally, need to see their government doing tangible things with their money. On the other hand, today, earlier, I was out and about with Agnes, and I stopped in to get a bag of chips and salsa.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a salsa just geek. And so I stopped to get a bag of chips and salsa, and this police officer comes in behind me.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it wasn't trouble or anything. He was just in for his lunch, too.
Yeah.
And so we were coming out as he was going in. And I walked out there, and, you know, it's West Virginia, but it's hot.
Mm-hmm.
And there sits his cruiser with the engine running, nobody in it, and you can hear the compressor for the air conditioner going full blast.
Well, yeah. It's got to be kept at a nice temperature for when he gets back in.
And that's taxpayer gasoline.
He doesn't care.
No, actually, I found out they are told to do that. That is an order. That is standing policy.
Well, yeah. I would imagine that, but still stupid. And if somebody swipes his car...
It's not his ass.
God.
Because he was only following orders.
You know, and the thing is with the wonderful Tea Partiers, they want to cut government down to the size to where they can drown in a bathtub, right? Well, problem of it is, as you cut more and more expenditures from the federal government, what does that translate to? Well, that means that your state and your county and your city and everybody else has to raise their taxes to keep providing the services that you rely on, you big ninny.
Or you just don't do it, and you do what they did in North Dakota and Michigan last year, and you unpave some roads. Unpave. You know, that's another one of those little signposts to the apocalypse that I keep talking about, Cossack. Unpaving roads.
Yeah.
You know, you were talking about the interstate system. Well, these are little two-lane highways that the counties say, well, you just don't have the money for the pavement every year.
Well, and that's what the Republicans are trying to do with the FAA. You realize that's why they were holding the budget.
Yeah, they want to unpave. Yeah, they want to unpave some runways too.
Yeah,
and you know, I tweeted about it earlier over the weekend. A story came out talking about the wave of solar storms that was going to be hitting the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And would screw with, you know, your interweb tubes and your microwaves and your communication satellites and yada, yada, yada. Well, all that information was put out by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Right.
NOAA.
Mm-hmm.
Well, NOAA is, of course, one of those organizations that the teabaggers would just as soon do without.
Correct.
Just like the U.S. Geological Survey that monitors earthquake activity.
Right.
Or just like the tsunami warning system. Dad, you know, who needs them?
Well, NOAA also runs the hurricane chasers.
Right, defunded.
Yeah.
What about those civil defense systems in, say, Alabama or Kansas that set off the sirens when the twister is approaching? We don't need those either. And we've got Joplin, Missouri, and Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and Prattville, Alabama, and the, well, to prove it. Jesus, I despise them, Cossack. I despise them.
A couple of years ago, if you remember, they had a twister. It came through here, hit Dothan, leveled the high school, and wiped out about half the town. And people don't seem to realize, unless they've lived through it, and seen what a natural disaster looks like. They just don't appreciate how desperately people actually need these services. I was down here after Opal, when Opal went barreling, right through Panama City.
No, I remember Opal.
It was horrible, Bob. I mean, I remember people fighting in line for a bag of ice.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how bad things get. You will fight for a bag of ice because it means the difference between your baby having milk that's not spoiled for the formula. It's like keeping what little food you have cool enough that it doesn't spoil in 2 days in the 90-plus degree heat.
Yeah. And like I said earlier, Cossack, and I think this is a valid point, I think wealth is finite.
Oh, yeah.
And when we see more wealth via reduced taxes going into the pockets of the very rich, because a 1% tax break to somebody who makes $5 million a year is a hell of a lot bigger number than a 1% tax break to somebody who makes $50,000.
Correct.
When you give tax breaks to the rich, that means you are effectively doing upward wealth transfer of a finite resource. And so it is going to tell in your roads. It is going to tell in your schools. It is going on and on and on. And, yeah, that pressure rolls downhill to individual local governments who eventually make the hard choices of, well, yeah, we sure did like having that park, that playground. We liked being able to mow the grass and empty the garbage cans and have the restrooms open in the park, but we can't afford it anymore.
Yeah.
And on the one hand, the godforsaken teabaggers say, well, that just proves government don't work.
Well, if you take away the necessary equipment, yeah, it's not going to work. You're right. You know, if you defund government, it isn't going to work. And then you can bitch about it more. And then when you finally do drown it in the bathtub, what do you get? Anarchy. And it's very ugly. People do not understand what that means. You know, the only thing we have money for is guns and bullets. And when things get bad enough, those guns and bullets are going to get turned on you.
Amen.
We're only funding the means to our own end.
And that is, well, we're paying people to us.
Yeah. You know, instead of KY, they're using grinding compound.
Yuck. That just... what an image. Cossack, have a great night, brother.
You too, Bob. Take care.
All right. Bye now. The Cossack calling from North Florida. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. How you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Andy.
Oh, hey, Andy. Got a little noise behind you. I couldn't hear you for a second there.
Yeah, I'm on a mobile phone. And I have a ear plug in. I'll take it out, maybe you can hear me better.
Yeah, if you go to the actual handset, it'll probably work off a little better.
You hear me any better?
Yeah, considerably.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to save my head from getting cancer with these mobile phones.
Well, I hope not.
I haven't told
because
you
if that, if because if mobile phones are going to do us in, they'll take the whole damn nation down.
Yeah. I haven't spoken to you in a long time, so there's a lot of things that have happened, that's for sure. One thing I wanted to talk about maybe a little bit was that Norwegian situation with Anders Breivik.
Yes.
Yeah, it should be no surprise to people in Europe that the right wing has really made some big gains there. And a lot has to do with them using the same model that's used in the United States. And again, going back to the Chamber of Commerce and using think tanks, right-wing think tanks, they're popping up all over the place.
Oh, yeah, like mushrooms after a spring rain.
Right. And in Norway, the Progressive Party, which is actually the real right-wing party, had 41 seats, which was a party that Breivik was in. So that's pretty large. And there's a party in Finland called the True Finns that has a pretty large, I think they're still a minority party, but they have a lot of seats. And they're trying to thwart the EU from some of the financing that they're trying to do to save some of the country. I hate to call them economies, like from the pit. I hate the name, though. But like Portugal and Spain and Italy and Ireland as well, all having problems right now. And of course the True Finns are really against using any Finnish money to out. So that's the right one. And then the whole thing with the Stieg Larsson series, Sweden.
Yep.
You know, group that they have, like the was the girl with the dragon tattoo and the other one, the girl who knocked over the hornet's nest, and I guess there's
two
others, I think. But that's all about right wing politics that go on in Sweden. You know, so it's nothing new there. And like everywhere else, it seems to just be getting worse and worse as we've seen it bring down. Well, doing a good job trying to bring down our economic system, at least any kind of social safety net.
Yeah, but to see that, I guess, Andy, our betters don't see it as bringing down our economic system because they don't consider that social safety net to be a part of it. They think that old folks living in poverty and granny dying of curable disease is somehow acceptable. And that tells me a little bit about their shallowness, Andy, because those are, I mean, you know, food stamps, for Christ's sakes, are a huge part of the retail economy.
One out of five people or something like that?
Yeah. You cut food stamps and Walmart has a problem.
Yeah.
Walmart is not allowed to have problems in the United States, right?
Right. And the Czech Republic was another case, too, and I know you read an email, and I saw the little surprise on your face when I said a party called Topo 9. You remember that?
Yes.
T-O-P 9?
Mm-hmm.
Well, T-O-P actually stands for Tradici Odpovietnost Prosperita. Tradici, tradition, odpovietnost, responsibility, prosperity. So tradition, responsibility, and prosperity. So what side of the aisle do you think they're on?
This
is the ultra-right wing.
Yeah.
Tradition, responsibility, and prosperity. That's like the Italian, I don't know if you've ever seen the Northern League, the guys who like to take pictures of themselves in the Templar garb.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those guys.
That's Berlusconi's. Or at least one of the parties that's strong. I'm not sure if that's his party or the one that strongly supports him, but one or the other. But those are Berlusconi's boys. They're like the Templars. You know, these are the real right-wingers. I mean, and they're just trying to...
Yeah, probably got some Opus Dei members along the way, that kind of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And they just try to undo any kind of public health care, and they're trying to undo the pensions. And in the Czech Republic, they were successful in upping the pension age and putting a two-tiered health care system that one you pay for and the other one comes basic standard care. But if you have more money, if you're rich and you can pay for it, you'll get better care. And they just instituted that, which is something totally new to the Czech Republic. It's a little Chamber of Commerce action there to privatize the health care system. And that was done by the three right-wing parties that now control it. And like I said in that email, they should get knocked out the next time around when the Greens and the Communists get back a minority role and the Social Democrats can get back in. But anyway.
And I guess the theory is, Andy, that if it gets bad enough, the pendulum will swing back. I don't know if I buy the pendulum theory anymore.
Not here, anyway. It might be tough here just because the dynamics has changed dramatically with Citizens United and the money. And the Telecommunications Act of 1996 knocking out, you know, the whole dynamics has changed. A lot of barriers and walls we had that kind of protected the rights of the little guy in our country have really gone by the wayside. So we're kind of in a whole new ballpark with new rules, which is going to make it a lot more difficult to get people elected, you know, that we want elected. No question. No question. I sent you an email, too, on Goldman Sachs in Greece. I don't know if you remember it, but it was pretty detailed. But the basic line is that Greece should have never been in the EU in the first place. Goldman Sachs helped them out with different derivative contracts, taking money for the future revenues coming through with different fees on, like, the airport and, like, their lotteries that were going to go out the door in swaps and take debt off the books. So it made their budget deficit look much better than it was and made their total debt look. They had a hit, a bogey of 3% on the budget deficit below that, and they had 1.2. But really, when you, Der Spiegel did the research and you add the numbers back in after taking out the swap agreements that Goldman did, it would have been over 3%. They never made the budget deficit bogey, annual bogey, and the 60% total GDP would also have been questionable because now they're at 143%. And of course you got S&P going nutso in our country because our total debt to GDP, I saw CNN Money only a month ago in July that said we were at 70% because you have to do certain adjustments. Like Social Security of $2.6 trillion is in our $4.3 of total debt. That gets taken out. That's not part of the debt formula that the IMF uses to get those total debt to GDP numbers. But Greece is at 143%, and we're about 75% or something like that. We're still way away.
I thought I saw something the other day that said we had reached 100%, but those were probably dummied up numbers, right?
Yeah, that's way too high. If you actually take it's like 4.3 trillion. I might have said billion. I should have said trillion. 4.3 trillion to like 15 trillion is our GDP. That comes out to 90%, but that's not how you do the calculation. There's different adjustments that have to be made to the debt. And one of them is Social Security has to be taken out, and that's $2.6
trillion. Now, let me ask you, because you walk around in these economic fields more comfortably than I do. I got a note in from our buddy Benedict a few minutes ago talking about the Social Security Trust Fund. He said as follows. The Social Security Trust Fund is irrelevant. It doesn't matter if it exists or it doesn't. If it does exist, it doesn't matter how much is in it, or even if it's bone dry. It doesn't matter if we double contributions or end them entirely. All that matters is whether or not Congress votes to pay benefits. If they do, you get them. If they don't, you don't get them. Regardless of whatever the truth of the fund is, it's up to Congress. It always has been. It's never been any other way.
Well, the argument the right-wingers will use is we no longer have the Al Gore lockbox, is that they put all the Social Security funds that
Now, bear in mind, Benedict is not a right. Benedict is not a right winger.
Right. But this is what I'm saying. What the right wingers will say.
Okay.
That it's in the general fund. That the money is used for anything. It could be used for war. It's in the general debt that we have of the country because it's not in a lockbox. On the other hand, that $2.6 trillion or so in Social Security debt is in T-bills. They're in Treasury bills with the full faith and credit of the United States. Now, we're not a AAA rating anymore, but we're still a AA+, which is a pretty good rating. So the United States government has an obligation to pay the beneficiaries of Social Security, which are all the people that paid into it, the same as they have an obligation to pay anybody else who has a T-bill. So, ipso facto, if you're going to pay off China or you're going to pay off Japan with their T-bills, you got to pay off the Social Security beneficiaries. So,
yeah, like which all takes me back to that which all takes me back to that one trip that Dim Leader once made here to West Virginia. You know, the Federal Bureau of the Public Debt is in Parkersburg,
paper.
West Virginia.
It's just paper.
And he said, and he pointed at a filing cabinet, he says, this is just a filing cabinet full of worthless IOUs.
Right.
Well, that was the public debt. That was the debt to China. That was the debt to the Social Security recipients. That was the debt. And you know, there were no howls of outrage from Wall Street when he said that. Man, it's just a bunch of worthless IOUs. Barack Obama has not said that they were worthless IOUs. But S&P's in a tizzy? You know, yeah, no, I think they should have been indicted. Don't you?
I just find it totally mind-boggling that we could go through, 90 years of history or something like this without having a downgrade through all this country's been through, including World War II.
The Depression.
GDP was 120%. Right. And the Depression, and it wasn't downgraded. That's what kind of boggles my mind.
Well, but see, one of those people wasn't president back then. A nice, responsible white man was president.
Right. And it blows my mind, as I said in my email, that you didn't hear a peep out of these guys when George Bush was running up the debt at these tremendous rates and not accounting for any of it. Where were they then with their great little accountants back there doing their calculations in India? On what George Bush was doing, racking it up and hiding the stuff and keeping it off the books, the wars and all that.
Yeah, and that, you know, that bears repeating. These godforsaken wars, Andy, were run off the books.
Right.
It's not even like Massey Energy, who has two sets of books for Upper Big Branch. They were run off the books.
Right. And it blows my mind, too. I was just reading today where there are four companies still at a AAA rating. Microsoft, Johnson & Johnson, Exxon, and there's one other that are still at a AAA rating, you know, United States Corporation. And I don't understand, how can a corporation domiciled in the United States have a AAA rating, yet the country has a AA+? It's not supposed to work that way. From what I know about credit ratings, if a corporation is domiciled in that country, they can't have a better credit rating than the country. That doesn't make sense to me.
Isn't that a reflection, Andy, of the fact that even if it's domiciled here, it is truly transnational?
Yeah, somebody like Exxon, you think so, Johnson & Johnson. You know, Microsoft, they're all probably have over 50% of their revenues overseas, I would guess. But yeah.
And that's a reflection of the 21st century political and economic power structures, isn't it?
Globalization, right. Well, they even say Apple right now has $86 billion in cash on their books, and that's more than the U.S. Treasury has. It's kind of an ominous thought that a corporation has more cash than our Treasury. And that's one corporation, just one. That's how successful they've been. You know, something else, something I mentioned Microsoft. On one of your podcasts, I listened to, somebody was talking about Bill Gates. And just to clear the air with on Bill Gates to get the wealth make Microsoft and the companies he did some pretty unethical and I think totally illegal things. And the main thing was, anybody who bought his PC software and put it on their hardware, their PC computers, if they were going to buy another operating system, and there was a competitor at the time called Digital Research, when they were first getting off the ground, and also there were Unix systems that could go on PCs, if you put those pieces of software, those operating systems, on those computers, Microsoft had to get a royalty, even though they added absolutely no value to that other system. They got a royalty mandated. It was a requirement of the contract to be able to get Microsoft.
Jesus.
So that was totally, to my mind, illegal and an antitrust, and he got away with that for years and pulled that off. And another thing, when you own the operating system, you own all the primitives, and you own how to manipulate that operating so you can control all the applications that run on top of it. And you can really do some damage to people by just hiding things and not telling people how these new operating system primitives work and functions, and your people are the only ones that know how it works. And so you control the operating, you control the application. So all the application vendors have to totally bow down to Microsoft and do their bidding, and Microsoft can buy up the application. They have a clear advantage over everybody else, and that's how Bill Gates got so rich. And now he's using his money, as you might know, to fund charter schools. That's his big thing, with privatizing the school system. But he got his money through illegal, ill-gotten gains.
Well, but he's also a classic. He's also a classic example of the easiest way to make $1 million is to start out with $999,999. Because that's
what helps when you're.
You know, his dad is still alive.
When his dad was a lawyer, and his mother was also a well-to-do in Seattle, and she was on the board of a charitable organization, and she's the one that actually had the contact with IBM. I think it was United Way. I think she was in one of the board members on the United Way of Seattle, and she had contact with IBM that she helped her son get the contract to actually put the software on the IBM PC, as the story goes. And he didn't even develop that software. He bought the software from, like, Seattle Systems or something like that. And of course, those guys are probably still kicking themselves in the head for selling their product to Bill Gates, and then he made it into the real money generator it was. But they sold out to Gates really early on and never reaped the benefits. But he did it all through contacts because, you know, his parents were really well-off people. I mean, here's a kid that dropped out of Harvard. I mean, he was at Harvard hanging
out, but he
didn't have the discipline to be able to graduate. You know, he was the type of person. He was too much.
No, he wasn't at Pottawatomie Technical and Community College. He was at Harvard.
Right. And just one other thing, too. You know, it's interesting we're talking about Europe. The Czech Republic was told by NATO that they had to use 2% of their GDP towards the military, so they could put it towards NATO and help out in some of, in like Libya and Afghanistan and so forth. And right now the Czech Republic is only spending 1.2% of their GDP. And they want to actually go down to 1% on the military, on defense spending. And they just told NATO to go take a walk. Well, we're not spending 2% of our GDP on the military. We ain't doing it. We can't afford it. Now, if we only spent 2% of our GDP on the military, our budget would be cut more than, we'd cut down 60%, right? Because we've got like a $15 billion GDP, 2% of that is like $15 billion GDP. It'd be about $300 billion. It'd be less than half of what our military budget is now.
You know, it's kind of amazing that kind of money won't buy you an effective military. But that's also a function of empire, Andy. You know, you prop up. Can you imagine if the military that was half its size, how many people out of work there'd be? And I'm no defender of the military, but this is the little junkie's habit that you get into.
It's a big jobs program.
That's primarily what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got, you know, I don't know what the ratio is of actual frontline fighter to support personnel. But it's got to be huge. It's got to be a huge disparity.
Yeah.
Because a military of that size takes a lot of logistics to support. There's got to be a hell of a But then again, if you remember the how can we forget the Iraq War and Afghanistan? Remember the Halliburgers? Remember the no-bid contract that Halliburton got to provide food for the troops instead of our military doing it itself? We outsourced it.
I just had a case, too, where that woman from the GSA, Bunny something, she was a career civil servant.
Yeah.
Mouthed off over that. And that case, I think, just came to fruition, and really she hardly got anything out of that, even though she blew the whistle on one of those.
Oh, I remember when Halliburton was busted. Halliburton was stone cold busted because their kitchens were inspected, their mess halls, and there was rotting meat laying out. And they were feeding rotting meat and vegetables to our service personnel.
Right.
And charging $30 per person per meal.
Right, I was thinking it was something like $25, $20, $25,
something. Well, $29 is what it was, but it's close enough.
Right. Oh, anyway, it's outrageous.
You know, we outsourced...
Army personnel.
During the Iraq War, we outsourced postal services. And when it got nasty, the private contractors, who were not under the flag and were certainly under no oath, looked up and said, "Screw this, I'm not delivering the mail up there, F it."
Right, well, when you've done that outsourcing and now you lose, and now you have to protect these guys, too, that are there. And you have to spend all the military infantry guys protecting these guys. These guys just can't grab a gun and fight like they used to or be part of the real military. You know, it's not there.
Nope.
Oh, are you there?
Nope. Yeah, I'm right here. But I do after all, I'm going to try to get some more calls in.
All right, you do that. I've had a lot of time.
No, right, good hearing from you, Andy. You take care.
Right up.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Andy calling from California. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Big Bob. It's your Marine Corps buddy here in Central Florida.
What's happening, Mark?
How you doing, Bob?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm fine. And I'm sorry I didn't mention last week about your son falling. I did not know that when I called. So.
No worries. He's back to normal.
Well, you're a good dad because you seem like you care very much and you handled it very well. If you can tell by listening through.
Well, no, his mother handled it very well.
I got a wife like that too, by the way.
Yeah. Agnes. Agnes is a nurse anyway, and so. You know, she knew what she was looking for as we got him into the ER and stuff. So, yeah, I'm grateful beyond expression.
Well, he sounds like a good-sized boy, and that probably didn't hurt him any.
Oh, I'd say by this time next year he'll be taller than me.
I think I saw you, Bob, in the couple seconds on YouTube there with Last Mountain.
I'm in it for about 2 seconds.
Yeah, well, your voice is just as clear and strong and convicted in that as we hear you over the radio. I joined the Marines at 18. I was raised by a Korean War veteran Marine, and men's voices and their command presence and their convictions to their hearts I think are important. I think women pay attention a lot to the way men talk, and I think they can tell a lot by what we really believe by intonations in our voices. And I think you have a voice that reflects a lot of truth always. And I'm very, very lucky to even be able to listen to you. I even listen to you on the weekend sometimes because your show covers so much information. To listen to it a second time is just incredible. It's like watching a good movie another time. It's really incredible.
Well, I thank you very kindly for that, Mark. I don't know. Sometimes I close the show and just sort of huddle up in a little fetal ball in the corner and suck my thumb. But that's because of the judgment I render upon myself.
Well, don't be too harsh on yourself. But easy for me to say. But I think the subjects we talk about are so heavy and profound, they drive people to the corners in those emotional. It's some real heavy duty stuff we're talking about, and we're not bringing it upon ourselves. It's being put upon us. And I would like to. Andy made a comment. He's talking about Greece and the Goldman Sachs, and I know I've listened to him before. He must be aware of the fact that that was put upon Greece. These Goldman Sachs with the derivative deals and their Social Security tied into it. These are intentional deals done. They're setups and traps, and a lot of this is covered in Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins. He shows how we manipulate global economies, our own economies, other countries' economies, NATO's economies. We manipulate through military back to civilian, through banking and vice versa, through banking, through military. It's like the Americans gave, I think it was Turkey, $3.3 billion to the country club fees to join NATO after we told them they were going to, and we let them keep the 0.3. But we told them they would be spending the 3 point on Lockheed Martin, Len Cheney jets, and so they did. So there's a lot of connections back and forth with that. I also would like to share.
God, it sounds surprisingly like organized crime, doesn't it, Mark?
It is. It's very well organized crime, and we probably read a lot of the same people, but one of the things when I read it, it made a lot of sense to me. It said before McDonald's can open in your country, McDonnell Douglas has to bomb you first. But
ain't that the truth?
It sure looks that way. And just going back a few years, you look at some of the most unionized countries in the world. One was Iceland, and Greece was not as heavily unionized, though twice and three times more unionized than the United States. It had a lot of apparently had or has a lot of social institutions for its people, and these are targeted countries. Iceland was at 96% unionized. Not a very big country, but you know there are people that figured it out. I know at the beginning of your show I caught about half of the beginning, and we were talking about the sailors that died, the Navy SEALs, and I actually put in an application on my fitness reports and at the end of my affiliation with the Marine Corps for the group that would have worked in that capacity called Joint Special Operations Command. And they're really super soldiers, a lot of guys that didn't finish their college but were strong and smart enough to have done it, that they made really excellent physical and mental soldiers. And that's where I in that same time frame my daughter was born, and I chose my daughter over that career. I used to say before I got out of the Marine Corps, I didn't want your free money, and I'm tired of being homeless. And people don't understand really what that means, but you at 2 o'clock in the morning, at 3 o'clock in the morning, you're trudging through somewhere, kind of sound asleep with the guy in front of you, over the hills and through the woods, sleeping in your sweater, and no matter where you are in the world, you just wherever you stop is where you live right then, and it actually once you live like that, I think that all of those comfort zones are mentally and psychologically kind of put somewhere on a shelf, which has some kind of connection to our homeless with veterans. I believe they feel they don't verbalize it, maybe some do, but I think that they feel the neglect of a country of our size, and I know that I feel it still. Myself, I'm not saying I'm homeless, but, I bought and owned my first house in Woodstock, Georgia, and paid it off, and it just didn't do a whole lot for me, but, I took care of my family and made sure that, that they were put first and always in safety and comfort. But, I also wanted to say that, just something about Afghanistan. These are old news stories, but we need to maybe think about them, is that we read the Big News Brzezinski's book for and the document, the Project for New American Century, they were looking for a precipitative event somewhere in the world, preferably here in the United States, to rally the Americans to send their Navy SEALs to war.
And, yeah, it was referred to as a new Pearl Harbor.
The new Pearl Harbor, and actually my daughter's young boyfriend, who later she goes on to marry, talked he talked about his grandfather and his affiliation with the tail end of World War II, kind of Americans living in a blur between Hollywood and a reality. And he had no questions for me. I spent most of my adult life in the Marines, and I didn't put it on him. But I think a person could look at me and tell that there's some remnants left there, but he didn't ask, and he has come back with a lot of issues like a lot of the other guys in this particular unit. But I would make the observation about the comment about New Pearl Harbor, what the agenda was and still is, though I think it's coming to a close here, hopefully, is to control the resources of Southwest Asia. And I think we've talked about that before, but for the poor Navy SEALs, if anybody knows or has heard this before, but 13% of the Carlyle Investment Group is owned by the Saudi Bin Laden Corporation, and they're still rambling around over there in those rocky hills. And actually, I guess our money's actually, and the Saudis' money, are both financing the Taliban somehow.
You know, it grieved me so much when I read the story of the hell of the Chinook going down, Mark, because it takes a lot, as you have noted, to train up those Navy SEALs.
Uh-huh.
And it is done at considerable both human and financial cost. And there are costs borne by those people's families that none of us can ever fully contemplate who have not been through that circumstance. And the idea that we had an opportunity to get the hell out of there and instead chose to waste their precious lives in that meaningless act of imperial muscle flexing drives me almost beyond the limits of my ability to remain calm. I'm sure, as you have, you know, you've noted, you just have the commitment that these individuals make. But because they make the commitment does not entitle us to be frivolous with the commitment they made, does it?
No, matter of fact, you would think, and I don't know what else citizens can do other than put the yellow magnets on their cars, but I don't think that those citizens really realize. I mean, it's way more dangerous than playing professional football. You know, and I'm not saying professional football doesn't hurt when you get hit, but and if you end up in wheelchairs, and once in a while they'll get their neck snapped, and I feel sorry for that. But when these things happen, I would make an observation that the standard citizen may not be picking up on, but when they show you the pictures of the folks that they're declaring that are dead, you'll see that they're not showing you a whole bunch of other pictures, which leads me to believe that some of the guys that were killed in that helicopter were part of the Bin Laden thing, and their faces will remain classified. And that's neither here nor there, but I believe that's going to be. It's just like I made an observation when we talk about casualties, like in Norway, or casualties in Iraq for Americans, and not equivalating the two. But what the American disinformation agencies do, and then give it to our NBC News, is that if 18 soldiers were killed in one day, they'll split those casualties up. You know, there were four killed today and six killed on Wednesday, and they break it down over a week or 2 week period of time. So it's not, so we don't upset the soccer moms, because Americans have not ever seen the ugliness of this war. They really haven't.
The American people do not have, as the saying goes, complete skin in the game, so to speak. Because, you know, we don't have conscription, we don't have a draft, it's an all-volunteer military, so therefore America will not feel the full brunt of the loss as we did in the Second World War, or as we did in Korea, or as we did in Vietnam. And I maintain, Mark, that is strictly, absolutely, by design. Because we don't, the powers that be don't want America to be fully engaged, because they're scared to death of the Vietnam syndrome, because when America gets fully engaged in something that America knows is patently wrong, I mean, my God, the numbers of the people who say it's time to get out of Afghanistan are way upstairs of 70%. Well, it would be impossible to maintain a war that the powers that be want that the American people don't. You know, my God, the numbers coming out of this budget surrender are astonishing. You know, one week, 1 month of Afghanistan would eliminate huge issues that are presently on the table for being hacked to pieces.
Well, it's like Sandra said, it's going to be the grandmothers versus it's not the grandmothers versus the Pentagon. It's the Pentagon bombing the grandmothers, and there are people in grandmothers' positions that are in their 20s that have to go for SSI because they fell off a roof. And there are families like Paul Ryan's family. Apparently, his father died when he was a young kid, and his mother got Social Security. Got help through the...
And he got through college on that and said, I've got mine, screw you.
That's right. But he's young and white, has pretty hair, and he's a smart ass. So now they're gonna run, and he's thin, and he kind of looks like a TV actor off 90210. He's just a smart ass Yankee punk. So they're going to run it against Obama because they're going to appeal to the young vote, which, you know, and the sad thing is, like you were saying earlier in the show, Americans don't know about the Depression, which also was man-made, intentionally man-made. I just would share. I'm speaking to you from Denton, Florida, and I'm on my way to Bob. But I just wanted to say that tomorrow in Wisconsin, that I think what happens in Wisconsin tomorrow will have a lot of significance on what the Koch brothers, the two brothers that are worth $43 billion, are doing. This is why, you know, they're running the economy off the cliff. They didn't care. They don't care about Standard & Poor's and Moody's, or they don't care about any of it because they want to go in and buy cities and states at a profit. And they'll corporatize our country literally. They'll be corporate cities. And corporate police and corporate firemen with no benefits. And you talk about a conflict of rights versus corporations that'll be literally taking place. And it already is in small amounts with the cameras and things. It's privatization and globalization. And this is austerity measures for Americans. And half of the dumbasses in this country are voting for the people that are doing it to us. So they really do a good job of controlling the message. But tomorrow in Wisconsin, I know Ed Schultz tomorrow and tonight, I guess, is live there. And I just hope that if anybody's interested, to please do what I did this morning, is call a Wisconsin radio station by the internet or look them up and call them in person and tell them how important you think firemen and school teachers are. I thought the firemen were the heroes in 9/11. Now they're the terrorists because they want a pension, you know. So anyway.
By God, that's beautifully said, Mark. And you know, kudos to you for you know, doing what you can with that situation. I thank you, and I think it's a great idea, and I hope others will do it. I tell you what, if you want to let me know, you know, what radio station you called or whatever, send me an email. By Jove, you know, I'll try, and I'll tweet it. I'll put it out there and urge people to. Urge people to call these stations and talk about it, and you know, listen online, do what you can, because that's something you can do to influence public participation and public concern.
Right.
Concern.
Public concern. It's really weird how we're communicating now. We actually have national communication operating by telephones through radio stations. It's not quite all internet. It's not quite all radio. And it's kind of a way to slice back through the corporatization of the radio industry, which you can see that's been merged and conglomerated like everything else. So anyway, it's like the train incident in Oklahoma when a gas car flipped over and the people called the local radio station to alert their neighbors and found out that
it was Clear Channel and the home office was in North Carolina.
It's
disturbing.
That's the country we're heading to at warp speed. And tomorrow in Wisconsin, we need to put throw the brakes on. So I will send you an email on that, Bob. And I just got on the internet and typed in United States, Wisconsin, and then found an AM talk station. I got lucky. So if anybody wants to call in the morning, between, 08 to 09 hours. And then he's got another talk show at 9 to 10. And that was Appleton, wherever the heck that is. That might be Green Bay area. But, I'll send you that email, Bob. And I'll look for that show, this weekend on CNN, reference, the mountain.
All right. I'll look for it. Take care, Mark. Good to hear from you, my friend.
Semper Fi, brother.
Bye now.
Bye.
Mark calling from Florida. Jude asking, you know, what can one do about the Afghanistan situation? And just sent me the link to the work that she does. And others have joined with her. WomenStanding.com. Just as it sounds, WomenStanding.com. There is an eloquent expression on the main page there of what it means to stand silently for peace. WomenStanding.com. And David in Tennessee noting Bill Gates. Bill Gates is a driven, networking to the max, spawn of Satan, me freak. Paul Allen, the code nerd that helped him do it, left 20 years ago for good reason. He's a nightmare to work for. Gates is. My previous employer tried to work with Microsoft, and based on methods fomented by Gates himself regarding suppliers, it was hell on earth. He's now pitching nickels of his way large stash at world problems to burnish his image. In short, he's a dick. That stands. Well, anything else would be gilding the lily. Well said. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, Bob, Tom.
Hey, Tom, what's up?
Well, I thought I'd let you know real quick. I already got much, but, downplay the politics today. I've read it all. It's like, it kind of puts a cap on a miserable day, but I had a cap to a wonderful day. Basically, one for you, I went and read Rainbow Pie or Deer Hunting with Jesus.
Oh, awesome.
And Linda was talking about she had to find some books for a reading club last week. Well, I got a couple for you. I got Deer Hunting with Jesus and Rainbow Pie by Joe Bajan. Well, she read them over the weekend and left me a little note with the books on my desk, and here's the note, and I thought you'd like to know. Tom, thanks for letting me borrow your books. I selected Rainbow Pie for our next book club read in October. Can't wait to hear the discussion, Linda. So, it's getting out there, so I thought that'd be some happy news for today, just to,
That's magnificent news. That's magnificent news. That's... I'll be curious to get a report back, if you don't mind, of what the group thought of it.
I'll be happy, and Mud just got home, so, my wife is here, and so I've got to go. Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Well, thank you, Tom. Take care. Bye now. It's our good buddy Thomas. Jug of punch in the chat room. That's inspiring. No, I really do. I hope we get a report back on what folks in that book club thought of Rainbow Pie, because it's a stunning piece of writing, and what a tour de force for the end of Joe Bajan's career. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Cassie.
Well, hey, Cassie, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Okay, I think.
Okay. I know that it's like the end of the show, so I'm going to be quick.
Okay.
Good
to hear from you, though.
Everything's going great. Studies are going great. I'm working at Princeton this summer, working for one of my professors. Doing well. Everything's good. Okay. So that's the easy part. My brother is in Afghanistan again.
Oh, no.
It's the third time he's there. It's real war there. I can't believe that it's not on the news. Like, it's just not. None of what they're doing, none of who they're fighting or where they are or having the same fight in the same town four times in a month, none of that is on the news.
And, I suspect, Cassie, for good reason.
Because they're having the same fight in the same town four times in a month.
Yeah, take the town, leave the town, town gets taken back, take the town again. Yeah, exercises in the most abject futility.
Well, except it's worse than futility because people die.
Yes. Wasteful. Tragic exercises. And you see, this story of the helicopter going down, I don't think is going to play well with the American people. Because it was, as Mark noted, you know, kind of all at once.
Yeah.
And a reminder of just how brutal this war is. And for somebody like John McCain to come out and say, well, you know, we've only been in Afghanistan for 3 years. The years that Bush was there, they didn't really count. Jeez. Yes, he did.
How come it didn't count when Bush was there?
Well, because because we only surged under Obama.
Wait.
I know. No. Don't try to apply logic to it.
Andy went over the first time under Bush.
Yeah, he did. George Bush started that war.
Yeah, because this is his third tour, but this is his third tour in 5 years. So the first one was under Bush.
Yeah.
And then he was there during the 08 election, so the second one was under Bush also. Because during the elections was still Bush.
Right.
He voted from there.
Yes.
And he voted for someone who...
But John McCain says that the only part of the war we're counting is the part that Barack Obama's been involved in.
No. That's just not right.
But that's how they are.
But,
Cassie, I wish I'd gotten to you earlier, but I've got to get out of town.
No,
don't you apologize, but I hope I won't be in tomorrow night, but I hope you'll find...
Until 10 minutes ago. Oh, you're not here tomorrow?
No, but I will be the rest of the week, so...
Okay.
Check us out then. Good to hear from you, dear.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Cassie at college, getting ready to start her sophomore year. How about that? Hard to believe, huh? It's time to get out of here. Thanks to everybody, and thanks to those of you who had the patience to wait on hold. Those of you who are still on hold, you know what? We'll have at it Wednesday night. Can we do that? That'd be great. Thanks to our chat room moderator, Lottie, who it's my understanding was out being nautical today. I hope it all went well. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy, our op-ed correspondent, Reverbo. Our chief engineer, webmaster, web designer, and maintainer of Bob's technical sanity, John Fox in Australia. And, of course, to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. WhiteRoseSociety.org, since 2002, literally saving progressive liberal talk by archiving on the Internet and then moving into live streaming with the Horn. Thank you, Ben. He always needs your help. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. I'll be with them tomorrow night. And always, 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 Gina,